This episode of the Due North Outdoors podcast is brought to you by Aquarius Home Services, installers of Kinetico water treatment systems, plumbing, heating, and cooling.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Due North Outdoors podcast. I'm Natalie Dillon, joined by Travis Frank. We're your hosts. Another day in paradise here in Minnesota.
The drifts keep getting larger outside our window.
The winteriest winter, I think, that we've had.
I'm glad that you made it here alive, and I'm glad that I'm here too. Brandon as well. We all survived the roads. Another storm is upon us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every day. It's been beautiful, but it's getting a little bit much. But that's kind of one of the, I feel like we're well into winter here, and I kind of in certain ways feel like it hasn't started because every day there's a new challenge to deal with.
Sure.
But that's kind of the magic and the beauty of winter is there's so many activities to do. There's so much we can do that we can choose from, but we never know how much time we're going to get.
I will say it's one of the prettiest winters, and a lot of people have been commenting on that, but you've been looking out the window and you see everything covered in white. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It feels like, you know, a traditional...
Narnia.
Yeah, it's Narnia. It feels like a traditional winter, and we haven't seen it in a while. I do feel bad for the wild critters that have to survive in this. It just, every time I drive down the road and I see deer in bellies are dragging in the snow, and I'm like, oh, I hope you make it. I hope you make it. The pheasants are out in the fields, and they're picking, and turkeys, too. They're trying to find food out there. It's not good for those animals to be out in the wide open. Predators can soar down and take out a pheasant real quickly in a wide open field. So even though they might find food out there, they might not survive because of that. So this is not a good winter for wild animals nor, maybe that's correct pronunciation, nor is it good for my hockey rink.
Oh, I know.
Pond. I can't
Ice
keep it.
Ice has been trash.
Yes.
Dang. Have you been out at all?
A little bit, but right now the weight of all the snow is kind of like sank the edges down, and then it's water on top of it, and it hasn't been cold enough to freeze it. And now we've got, you know, 6 more inches of snow soaking into that, so I'm basically going to have to let that freeze and then reflood it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Nearby us, like the family pond in the neighborhood that hasn't been open since whatever. We had the first deep freeze in like end of November.
Yeah.
And the public ones, I've gone a little bit, but it's just been pretty trash.
And there's something about winter, and you know so much about this, but since I have had this rink out there, and I am an avid outdoorsman, I'm not an avid indoorsman. When you can't go outside, your health suffers from it.
Yep.
And so having those escapes to get that fresh air, that exercise, to be outside, it has made just like my level of joy soar the last couple winters.
Yeah.
And I need that. I want to get out there. And so, like, this being inside in the gray and everything, it's not good. It's not healthy. I mean, there's a reason people suffer depression in the winters. And so finding your outlet, finding what you can do to stay energized, exercise, and be outside the fresh air, the vitamin D does matter in December, January, and February.
Don't get me started on vitamin D. This is going to be,
well,
I just
be a whole
podcast episode.
I just opened up the can.
Well, You've mentioned the word, you've said vitamin D, you've said escape. We're talking about health, wellness.
Did I just segue into our show?
I think you did.
Wow.
So if you are feeling like winter's dragging on you a little bit, being a little bit much, you're going to love today's episode because we are getting a jump start on some spring break ideas, some winter getaways, some of our favorite spots and recommendations and places that one could escape for a little bit of fresh air.
And still can do this winter. We're thinking ahead, you know, what should we do? And it doesn't make sense for us to have a spring break getaway in March when you're already going to be on spring break. You need time to plan.
Exactly.
So we're going to talk about some ideas that we think will get you outside and give you time to do it this winter and this spring.
Some of them will be a little bit farther away, more planning, warm weather, and some ideas for those that want to stay a little bit more.
Yeah, you
local
challenged me to bring
well.
A few ideas, so yeah. I did that. And I think you have some as well. I'm excited to hear yours.
You
Mine
well.
Are going to be amazing, of course, but I'm excited to hear
yours. So much pressure.
Yeah, Brandon, did you bring anything to the table today?
No.
Okay.
Turning his mic back on.
But I can always chime in if you need me.
Okay. You can rate our choices and share which one's best.
Oh, there you go, Brandon. There it is. You've got the pencil and paper. You're going to vote on which options you think are the best.
I'm in. I'll do it.
Cool.
All right.
Should I get us started?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely.
So our first trip of the day, and this is the one I kind of mentioned earlier, it's kind of a four-parter, so I don't need to do it all in a row. But if anybody's kind of following along my stuff for the last handful of years, you probably know by now, I do have a soft spot. I love winter, I love the north, but I've got a soft spot for Southern Florida this time of year.
So predictable.
I know. It's so obvious.
You might as well sit in Naples. Are you going to Naples?
Well, that's not one of my choices, but okay. I will be there in a few weeks. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, my goodness.
There's so much to do in South Florida when it comes to outdoors, when it comes to fishing. I think that there's almost no better place. And there's a lot, you know, some of what I'll talk about today will be familiar to people, but that's actually, I think, one of the beauties of it. You don't need to go. I mean, it's a hike from where we are in Minnesota, but, you know, it's right in the U.S., very easy to get to, tons of flights, pretty familiar, and there's just so much to do down there. It's a paradise.
So I think a lot of my friends that are, like, very active, when they go on these trips, sometimes they say, I can only sit on a beach for, like, one day, and then I need to do something. So do any of these apply to these people?
They all do. Yeah, all there's no beaches in my list of recommendations
here. All right, giddy up,
here.
Let's go.
So yeah, that's funny. When I go to Florida, I think I maybe go to the beach for about an hour in a week-long trip. But so I will talk about, you know, we can talk about a few different places, but I want to start off with talking about flats fishing in the Florida Keys, which is kind of the pinnacle for a lot of people. And that's something that I did for the first time when I was pretty new into fishing. I was maybe like 8 or 9 years ago, and I had fished a season or two up north and got to go on some guided flats fishing, both out of Key Largo and Isle Mirada. Mm. And that is something that I highly recommend. It's definitely a bit of an investment, but something that avid anglers, families, you name it, everybody can get a lot of enjoyment about. And for me, have you done like some flats fishing, Travis?
No, okay. I've fished down in Southern Florida, but I haven't gotten out on the flats like you're talking about.
Yeah. So in my experience, I'm of course no expert with it, but it's one of the coolest ways to get connected with nature when you're out there. So I've done both tarpon fishing and bone fishing. So in the same
tarpon is the number one on my bucket list.
Have you never fished for him?
No. It's literally the one thing that I want to do. I want to catch a tarpon on a topwater lure because I'm so into muskies, you know, and the strike. I've seen it done. That's one day I will do that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
well, I might actually switch around and jump to something a little bit different, but that's similar because you mentioned musky fishing. So there's two times that I've fished for, or two different areas that I've fished for tarpon down in Florida. First is flats fishing for them. And second is actually up in Marco Island. So not in the Keys, if you're not familiar, on the other side of the state. There's some guys that are Minnesota guys that fish for tarpon near Marco Island, like you're targeting muskies. So actually with baitcasters.
Jason Hammerner?
Yeah. And then the guy that I went with is Captain John Siebold.
Okay.
But they go out of the same area. And that is an experience to remember. So I had fished for tarpon a couple times before going out with John Siebold. But he literally handed me a musky rod with a baitcaster on it and a swim bait just with the hooks chained. Switched out for, you know, saltwater circle hooks, and we were literally casting for tarpon like you would be for a muskie. I even figured
why did they switch a circle hook on it?
I think safety for the fish.
Okay.
Well, you want saltwater hooks so that they don't get beat up, you know, by the saltwater.
Yeah, but you said circle hook, so I was just curious.
I think safety for the fish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah. But along with that, I'll say, so casting for tarpon. If you're not familiar, they're called the Silver Kings. Oh. They get really big. I mean, they're small ones too. Exactly. Yeah, and people say bow to the king. They're known for their aerial, just acrobatics. So if you've, you know, seen videos or done it yourself, you know that they like to jump. They do these crazy out-of-the-water head shakes. And you say bow to the king because you actually want to give them some slack. Basically, move your rod towards the fish so that they don't shake the hook when they do jump out of the water. But when I remember jumping, you know, my first tarpon like it was yesterday, and I couldn't believe it how powerful they were. Doing it on musky gear was pretty cool. But I have to say, since it was a circle hook, you're not supposed to set the hook. Mm-hmm. And I could not get over that. So I missed a bunch right at the beginning because I was that. Every single time.
That's why I was wondering the circle hook. That's why I asked you.
Yeah.
It seems, you know, with if it's a different presentation, but like a swim bait, you're working that thing.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But I think because, you know, the circle hooks, they slide out. So they're going to get usually the fish like right in the corner of the mouth. So easy to take out. Probably that's another thing, too, is you want it to be, especially with those big, powerful tarpon, you want to be able to get them off
so
the hook.
So you're
right
using conventional
boat.
Gear, bait caster. You're not doing a fly rod here.
Yeah, so that's on my bucket list, of course, but I need a lot more practice before that. A lot of people who are big anglers, they're going to say when you're doing bonefish, when you're doing tarpon, you got to do it on the fly. Mm-hmm. So, but I can tell you from first-hand experience, conventional works too. And I've caught plenty of both on live bait too. So I can say that if you have the chance to actually get hooked up with tarpon, jump it a bunch of times.
Yeah, I'm hooked. I'm on
it. Give it a go, whether it's fly or not.
Put that number one on the list. You've already won. It's already been number one on my list, so... Dang it.
Yeah. So out of Marco Island, Hammernick, Captain John Seabold, just have had a ton of fun with them. And then in the flats, actually. So I've done that in the Keys. Mm-hmm. So we're talking just a few feet of water. Usually a guide's going to be on, you know, on the, yep, pushing.
Standing up five
yes,
feet, 10
Travis
feet
Travis
is above.
Demonstrating. Yeah. Exactly. Pushing you through, no motor on. And you're usually up on a stand at the front, actually sight fishing for them. So I've done that, but with live bait. But being able to see these shadows of tarpon come in, you know, depending on the time of year, if they're migrating through, seeing their shadows, or if you're bone fishing, you're looking for actually these little plumes of mud where the bonefish actually are picking up, usually like crabs or whatever they're eating out of the sand. So getting to just sit there and watch. And sometimes you have warning and you know like a fish is in the area. Sometimes a guy just going to shout out, you know, 10 o'clock, 30 feet out.
You know, it's so similar
it.
To watching the bobber in an 8-inch ice hole. You do not ever know when that bobber's going to go bloop.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the same adrenaline rush.
Yeah. The adrenaline rush is for sure it. So, but hey, no, you're onto something.
No, I was just joking about that because a lot of people are staring at a bobber in a hole right now.
That's true.
Yeah.
So if you think that that's exciting, just you wait.
Just you
until
wait.
Until you
tarp. Okay, so the migration of tarpon, you know, they aren't always in one. It's not like they're just everywhere, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's certain times of the season to go down and target them. Did you base your trip on a certain time?
No, mine was always based on when I could get off work. So the only times, I'm not going to be super familiar with their seasons, but the times that I've fished for them, at least open water. I've done some like backcountry fishing for them too, more like in brackish waters, and they're a lot smaller fish, but... has always been your spring breaky time. So February through, I think the latest I've ever gone was May. And that's actually when I had the most luck. Flats fishing was like late April, I think, or early May.
I was going to say, like it's a historical place, the Boca.
Yeah.
Yeah, Boca, what is it?
The Boca Canal, or yeah.
Yeah, but there's this bridge and this pass, and it's just legendary. But that, I think, is May and June.
Yeah, I think you're right.
When that's really the key time to be there. So that's part of this migration. But obviously, you're talking, you know, midwinter. So it's a long enough season that you can get in on this action.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went down there trying to do it one time. It was a friend that was getting married. And we're like, oh, we're here. We got to go fish, you know. Mm-hmm. And I called this guy. And I'm like, are the tarpon in? You know, it's the first thing I asked because it's number one on my list. And he's like, no. And we ended up doing a bunch of other stuff. And he got sick and I had to drive the boat in. And he got scared. It was the craziest mm-hmm. trip of our life. Huge storm came in. Like, he's curled up in the fetal position, lost, out to sea, and I drove the boat back in with my buddies, and it was just like, holy cow.
Wow.
But the things you can experience and the things we saw, sharks jumping out of the waves, like, oh, it's so awesome.
That's the other thing I was going to say, too, that I love about being on the flats is you get to see the most incredible thing. I mean, everything from turtles, different fish, but yeah, I've seen probably an 8-foot hammerhead just swimming on by, and just the power that you see from them, especially when they're in shallow water. So you're pretty darn close to them.
Oh, so it's cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've done multiple tarpon fishing trips down mm-hmm. there, it sounds like. Pick one. If somebody said, okay, which one do I do?
I would say, can I cheat and say if you're a
Brandon?
Up north,
can she
if
cheat?
You're a muskie angler.
Yeah.
Well, I think if you have the skill set for it, go on the flats and go on the fly. That would be my answer. Yeah. And if you want to do, you know, a family trip or you're less experienced at angling or something, you know, do live bait either Marco Island or in the Keys and just get hooked up to a fish.
Sweet.
It's fun.
Was that part one of your 4-part series?
That was one and two. Don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you got?
Well, you got... Oh. Okay. So it's my turn already. I thought we were going to go through all of your parts.
We'll come back to Florida. Don't worry.
Okay. So a few years ago, I had the chance to fish trout on Pyramid Lake in Nevada. And I want to say it was like January, February, something like that. I think it was February. I'm pretty sure it was February. They have world record Lahontan cutthroat trout in this lake. And it's kind of warm weather-ish. You know, it can be a little chilly. It's really just like, this is a cool place to fish. And now is a good time of the year. Basically, their season down there on that particular lake, the Lahontan trout season runs from October 1st through June 30th. So this is kind of like the time to do it. Cool thing is that you don't really need much to do it. You can, most people, when we were there, we watched them, they were all fishing from shore. Instead of bringing a boat, a lot of them brought ladders.
Oh, wow.
Which was interesting because it allowed them to walk the ladder out in their waders and then stand up above and be high up, but further out than they might be able to cast with the fly.
I've seen people do that in saltwater too, on flats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're standing on ladders out there. It's very interesting, but it's like one of the most visually stunning places you might ever fish because the mountains are coming out of the lake around you. And so I specifically remembered we were watching the sunrise while we're getting flies ready to cast out there. There were quail that soared past us, you know, and we caught huge, well, I think it's huge. And that would be just like a regular trout for them. 41 pounds is the record.
Wow.
I'm talking.
Well, like what sizes did you see?
Probably close to 20 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they're enormous, enormous fish. You know, and like I was up in Alaska this summer or this fall and we fished in the Kenai for rainbows, and that was just like this amazing experience. And they were talking about how huge these trout, the rainbows get up there. And I caught one, and they were like, holy crap, half the size of this fish that we saw in Pyramid Lake. It's just one of those places that it's not hard to get to. If you wanted to fly out into Reno, it's like 45 minutes outside of Reno. And it's definitely worth the experience. You know, I'm sure there's other things to do around there. We did it as basically just like a half a day as part of this filming that we were doing down there just to experience it. Once we caught the fish, got the footage we were after, we moved on. But I want to go back because it's just such a cool place.
Would somebody want to book a guide or is it something that you can
Yeah, you can do both. And okay. Actually, I have some friends when I came back from it, I told them, they're like, oh, I did that one time. Because I didn't realize how much of a like a bucket list experience it could be for some people on the fly. You know, like as a fishing guide, I had people from around the country that like a muskie on the fly was part of their 10 items on their bucket list. You know, and turns out that going to this lake in Nevada was on that same list too. So if you like this kind of you know, big trophy fish on the fly, that belongs on your list. I don't think you have to do it on the fly. No live bait, no barbs. I mean, there are some rules to abide by out there, but it's just this cool place. And you get out there and you're like, holy cow, there's nobody else around. Or like you're just driving down this highway that turns into like a gravel road. You kind of just pull off to the side and people just pull off to the side randomly and you're fishing. And there's things that you'll learn, but like we didn't have a guide. It was just this other, this guy that I was hunting and fishing with out there. And this was something that he loves to do.
Yeah.
And yeah, super cool.
What does the trout look like? Like what's its coloring like and whatnot?
I probably would be better to show you a picture. It's kind of hard to explain, but
paint the picture for me.
What does a rainbow look like, Natalie? Let's see. I'm going to pull it up real quick. Tap dance for me.
Okay. Let me ask, is it, it's pretty dry there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Desert.
Yeah. Yep.
This is great for podcasts.
I know.
Our producer's mad at us.
Like, it's similar to, I mean, you can see these pictures. It's very similar to a rainbow, but just think of a rainbow trout.
Yeah.
Like on steroids. Just a monster.
Wow.
Monster fish. And again, visually.
I would guess you're in like South America there.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you do a search for Lahontan cutthroat trout on Pyramid Lake, you will see some of the most stunning photos because the mountains are coming out of the water mm-hmm. around you, and it's just spectacular. Yep. So there you go.
Incredible.
Part one of one.
Do you want to do another one, or should I go?
Hey, where do you put that on your list?
It's way too early in the game for me to start throwing out rankings right
He's
now.
Taking, okay. I'll say yeah. I'm excited about that. So,
all right.
Yeah.
I kind of sold it. I got one yeah. taker.
So, can we go back to Florida?
Well, I guess.
I mean, we have to.
It's your show.
I promise my whole list is not in Florida.
Sounds
but
like
a lot
it.
Of Minnesotans...
I was like, is it just this is her whole list? She's going to break down Florida. Four parts of Florida?
No. I'll do the second two parts of it, and then okay. we can move on. How does okay. that sound?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
hey, it's your show. You do what you
yeah,
gotta do.
Thanks,
here.
Travis. Yeah. So, a little bit different way to experience Florida, Everglades National Park. Specifically, ooh. There's an area called Flamingo that I fished in. So, we're talking now backcountry fishing. So, this, if you've been in Florida, if you've seen the mangroves, the forests that are growing right out of the salt water, tangled mangroves. So, the fishing actually back in there can be very exciting. And I'll say I've fished it, I think, pretty much all the ways. So little flats boats, canoe, kayak, and wading. And I'll offer something different. Wading is especially exciting because...
Gators.
So don't do that alone. I was thankfully always down there with friends that kind of knew what to look out for and what to do. But back there... different type of tarpon fishing and also the snook. And I'll say snook is another one of those bucket list fish. I think I probably fished for them. I had to go back and like look at my travel notes and stuff, probably three or four or more times before I actually caught my first one. And it was partly just, I think, like bad luck. I caught cichlids down in Florida?
A what?
Cichlids. It's just little fish that they're pretty
paint
easy
the picture,
to catch.
Natalie.
They come in all different colors. It's just they're not naturally there. I think they're from South America, but they ended up there.
Okay.
But yeah, I seem to catch a bunch of those instead of snook. But snook is another fish that is shocking how they're good of fighters they are.
Saltwater fish in general, the yeah. powers. Oh, if you've never fought a saltwater fish, like. It blows your mind. You set the
exactly.
hook and you're like, it's 200 pounds. It's
yeah,
got to be 200
exactly.
pounds. And you get it up and it's a 12
this
incher. Cute
you're
little
like, thing.
What?
Exactly. And snook, they're beautiful fish, but they don't look like they look friendly. They're just, you know, nicely light color, a little stripe down them. They look like a sweet
Nemo?
Little fish. Like a little, yeah different,
friendly.
But
yeah.
friendly little fish. And yep. they fight angry. And it's fun because when you're fishing for them, they're usually going to be really tight up in the mangroves. So. You got to practice your casting. Usually,
so if you're a good largemouth bass fisherman up here,
yeah, yep. for sure,
it translates.
Yeah, so doing that, it's something like you. I know that there's guides that do it, but it's also if you just go with really like a bass setup, swim bait, chuck it up in the mangroves, you'll catch other things like mangrove snappers and things like that. But when you get on a snook, it's fun, and that's good really year round, yeah. definitely this time of year. So.
Where does that one fit on your list, Brandon?
I mean, you're gonna ask every after every
gonna,
one. We're gonna take a minute to figure this out.
That'll be how we transition.
I'm jotting down notes.
Okay. All yeah. right.
Are you excited about snook fishing in the backcountry?
Well, I'm still so much. I mean, like, yeah, I can envision just the branches draping over
yeah.
and just that scene I've seen so many times. It's definitely something that I think would be cool.
Yeah.
I am still. If I were making this list, I still have tarpon up on top.
Yep. I can't argue with you there.
Yep.
Yeah.
But
I led
super
strong.
Cool.
I led strong.
Yeah. It's super cool, though. I mean, yeah, if you have options, then for sure.
Last, I'll say, okay, then we'll get out of Florida. So if you ever are in Miami for like a couple days or whatever, you're on a trip there, you got to lay over there. Have you seen the peacock bass fishing in Miami?
I was going to ask if peacock.
Yeah, it's
bass
on the list.
Would be, okay.
So for those of you that are unfamiliar, peacock bass, well, they're. From the Amazon originally, stocked in Miami, I think in like the 80s, don't back check me on it. But now they're in basically every roadside canal and ditch and pond, golf courses. They are everywhere. They are a exotic fish. I think Brandon just pulled up a picture. Brightly colored, yeah. red and orange and green.
It's kind of like a perch color.
Yeah, very much.
On a bass.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when we're talking about strong fighting fish, I say it fights a lot like a small mouth, like very feisty and squirrely, but pound for pound.
How big? Because I know down in the Amazon, they get huge.
Yeah, not
as big. In Florida, what are we talking?
I mean, I probably caught like 6 or 7 pounders would be the maximum, but often about like the bass that we'd get here, a little bit bigger. But they do get, I think it's the males, they get the big like crown forehead. Yeah. So they're...
Right, when she did this, I envisioned like 60 pounds. I wish we had this video
Amazon,
right now.
Yeah, sure.
She's holding her hands up.
There are some huge ones. That's out of Florida. So there are some big ones of that size.
I would
size.
Guess that's a 12 to 15 pound fish.
I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they get sizable. Yeah. But even when you catch, like we were saying earlier, if you catch a 2-3 pounder, they're so feisty. And seeing that flash of color in the water, and it's hilarious because you can literally be, I've actually done this, just like on the roadside. Like you have to time your casting with the cars going by. And then you pull up these just like amazing Amazonian.
So cool. That's why I will never travel anymore without the pocket
rod.
Fishing pole. My wife finally got one for me because I've complained so many times about being somewhere where I could have caught a fish and I didn't have a fishing pole. And now it's like, nope, I'm never going anywhere. Even if there's not water in the itinerary, anywhere that I can see, I'm putting it in my bag because you just never know what you could pull over on the side of the road and catch something awesome.
You've learned your lesson.
I have learned many lessons.
And there's something so fun about that when you're just like somewhere new and you just try it out. And then when you do catch something or catch something exciting, it means so much more.
Also, it's kind of nice. Most states allow you to just go on your phone and buy a license right there on the spot. So you don't have to then, if you're like, holy cow, I want to catch something here. There's something jumping on the water that looks huge and awesome and fun. Let me just do a quick search. One-day fishing license, $17. Boom, you got it. I don't know. I just made that number up. But that, you know, typically for a one-day fishing license, it's not 2 arms and 4 legs.
For sure.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And also, so like lastly about this, there's definitely times that when I've been down in Florida, I've, you know, gone out with guides and done full-day things and these epic adventures. And then there's also so many opportunities too. Like we said, just fish any body of water that you see. You don't need a ton of equipment. You don't need a ton of planning. And you can run. I've done an entire trip down there just shore fishing and caught a dozen different species of fish and had a ton of fun. So,
yep. What's the most, I'm trying to think of some of the mackerel. Holy mackerel.
Yeah.
Like all the mackerel I've caught from shore down in Florida before. Mm-hmm. It's just, they're fun fish to catch.
Snappers.
Yep.
Oh, okay. My favorite because I've caught the most of it because they're super easy to catch. But do you know what a grunt is?
A grunt?
A grunt. You'll find them just on like any like dock
or
whatever.
That was
saltwater.
So Minnesotan of you too, by the way. Oh,
it's my favorite.
Oh, by the way. Oh my gosh.
Those Florida grunts.
Yeah.
So a cute little fish. Great to, you know, if you're fishing with kids or whatever, with, you know, live shrimp or something off the shore, off docks, piers, whatever.
Grunt.
I think that there might be another name for them too, but that's what most people call them. They're little blue and yellow striped fish with a red mouth. And they actually grunt like a little pig when you
seriously?
Pick them out of the water. Yeah.
I'm searching this now too.
There's a few, sometimes even like snappers and stuff will make a little grunting sound. But if you're down in, I'm sure there are many places, but for sure all over Florida with kids just fishing off a dock, live bait, you will.
It's kind of like a silver bluegill almost, but longer.
What picture are you looking at?
I don't know. I Googled, I Googled grunt.
Yeah.
And I didn't get fish. So then I added fish.
The smaller ones are a little more blue and yellow.
There's no blue there. You sure you caught grunts?
No, I'm positive. I am.
All right. She was catching shiners, Brandon.
Yeah. I see some blue and some
you
grunts.
See some
there's
blue?
There's a lot of
I'll
grunts.
I'll pull up a picture.
There's all a right. lot of grunts.
But for now.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone, for coming to Florida with me.
Write down grunt on your list, Brandon. Here we go. And my turn?
Takes the cake. You're up.
Okay. So we've done a lot of fishing. Hunting is still doable this time of the year. We're heading to Arizona.
Mm.
And I have been asked many times, because we host Upland Bird Hunting TV show as well, if you could only go one place, where would you go? And Arizona is very high on the list. There's a couple of other places as well. But we're talking winter getaways here. So Arizona is a lot warmer, typically, than Minnesota in January or February. Yes. Their quail hunting season runs through, this year would be February 12th, but it's usually kind of right mid-February. So there's still time this year. But if this is something to do for next year, it's something you can plan on. I will say that, you know, they get these monsoon seasons that really dictate the, like, numbers of quail down there. They have been getting good moisture, which bodes well for not only this season, but next season as well. Right now, their quail numbers are phenomenal. I have friends that have been down there that I've talked to in the last couple of days, and it's been the best quail hunting that they've ever experienced down there. Arizona has millions of acres of publicly accessible lands, which mean that you can drive down there with your dog and get out and hunt. And you can use an Onyx map, and it'll, you know, the app on your phone, and it'll show you exactly where the boundaries are, where you can go. Most of the time, you're going to get on a spot that you could walk for days and days and days and days and days and never reach the end of it. That's how vast it is. I've hunted down there twice for quail.
Is there a place you recommend flying into, or?
Yeah, so I'm going to get into there's okay. three different species of quail that live in Arizona. Gambel's quail, scaled quail, and Mearns quail. All three of those species live in different habitats, which make that hunt really cool. Some people on their list of, you know, like they put it on their bucket list for bird hunting, it's the Arizona Slam, and that would be to get all three of them in a trip. Even more of an accomplishment for some people would be to do it all in one day. Some people can do it, but it requires you to be in different places. Mearns quail, we'll start there. They live in the very southern part of Arizona, and they live in the mountains. And they live in some of the most beautiful country that you will ever walk. Like, it is stunning. The grasses in those mountains in southern Arizona are golden, like it came out of a catalog, mm-hmm. you know, like it is so stunning. Then there are what they call live oaks, and they're like a stubby oak tree basically down there. And that's where these quail with these big claws, they go digging for tubers mm-hmm. under these oak trees. They are covey bird, which means that they all stay together and they hold very tight. So if you have a dog that points birds and the dog finds them and goes on point, when you walk up there, the explosion is unexplainable. There could be 20 birds exploding out of like the inside of your tire. That like, wow. Or put your arms in a circle and have 20 birds come up that way. And they
why
all
do they
go
huddle up so much?
That's their like
protection.
That's their protection. Yeah, exactly. At night, they all back into each other and they're all facing out. They stay together. It can get cold. Okay. I've hunted down there in the snow before, believe it or not. One time, it followed me down. And we couldn't say where we were supposed to go because it snowed and it dropped to like 28 degrees and the pipes froze on the building and they were like, we got to close.
Oh, goodness.
So we had to find a different place to stay. So it is possible. Okay. But last year when I was down there, it was 70 degrees. We were in a t-shirt hunting. Gambel's quail are the most iconic quail in Arizona. They're the like state bird almost. If you're on a golf course in Arizona, you see them running across the green when you're trying to putt. That's a gambled quail. They got that top, you know, that feather on top of their head. They're super cool looking. A lot of people call them ninjas because they're like, they're here now, they're gone. And they're over there and they're under that cactus and boom, boom, boom. And they like, they're just these little missiles and their last resort is to fly. So if you can get close to them and pin them and then get them to flush within range, that's an accomplishment. And then scaled quail as well. All three of those birds have their own cool factor about hunting them. Where you find them, they're going to be on the desert floor in those cactus country, and so there's something cool about walking through the desert on a hunt, mm-hmm. which is why when you come back from it, you can't like it's just something special about it. So if you're a bird hunter or a hunter and you're thinking I want to go on a winter getaway, early spring break because the season ends mid February. That is something that definitely belongs on the list. I did do a story with a local from Minnesota who now lives down there. He runs a outfitter called Border to Border Outfitters. And so that is one of several quail hunting guides that you could hire to go down there. But he, interestingly enough, is from Minnesota. He starts his hunting season up here by the Canadian border and then hunts his way with clients of his mm-hmm. down to Arizona down there, so that hence the name Border to Border. It's just one of those cool getaways that definitely rank high on the list of things that I've done in my life.
I'm curious, 'cause it's a world I'm not very familiar with, but is the hunting community in Arizona? Is it similar to here? Is it as, you know, popular? Is there that robust community, or is it more
unique
down there?
I think the last couple of years of popularity has really exploded because it's become kind of this, like a Montezuma quail, a Mern's quail, it looks like from another, like it's from another planet. It has, it's a black head with these white swirls that wrap around. And then on its chest, it's dotted, polka dot, white and black. It looks like a tuxedo in some instances. Like it's just this bird, you hold it, you're like, holy crap, where did you come from? And where they live, the fact that you can go down there and hunt by yourself. You know, we could get in a car and drive down there. It's a haul. I have a friend who's actually in New Mexico right now as we speak. He just hunted Kansas yesterday. He's in New Mexico on his way to Arizona, and he's making like this dream hunting trip happen. So it's doable. From anybody in the Midwest can go down and do it. And that's why it's become this popular winter getaway. I think it's as popular. Every state that I've ever hunted in, you have locals that hunt. You know, there's something primal about hunting that it doesn't matter where you live. People hunt.
Yeah. Same with fishing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Everywhere you go. Exactly. Every country, every part of the, you know, the U.S. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. So you're in the mountains. You've got cactus around you. You're golden sunset in a t-shirt on February. And then, you know, like we cooked fajitas up over an open fire that we started up in the mountains. And it's put it on your list.
Cool.
Yeah. Brandon, put it high on your list.
It's on the list.
Competitive. Okay. I'm good. I was hoping you were going to bring some hunting ones.
I did. There, I did it.
Good. Yeah. I love it.
The new year is here. And for many of you, that means new personal goals and maybe just maybe even a few house projects. If your furnace is on that list of projects to tackle, let Aquarius Home Services help you. Right now, they're offering $98 off any furnace repair. That's $98 off of any furnace repair. Their heating and cooling technicians are experts at troubleshooting and repairing any and all types of furnace-related issues. Start the new year off right and stay warm and cozy this winter season. Aquarius believes in earning the right to be recommended, and I recommend them. They're just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com.
Okay, I think I'm up. I'm going to save my last tropical one for last. So something that I'm only have had a taste of myself, but it's been on my bucket list for a long time. This is kind of going to be a wide category here, but you know, I like muskies. And some of us up in the north forget that there's actually muskie fishing year round or almost year round, depending on what state you may be in. So southern-ish U.S. muskie fishing is next. Again, broad category. So,
West Virginia?
So yeah, West Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee. I'll say up front, I've never been to any of those places. Cave Run, Kentucky has been on my bucket list for a long time. And I remember when I first started muskie fishing and I learned that there's muskies in the, you know, quote unquote south to us. I'm like, oh, they've got to be small. You know, we've got the big muskies up here. And I was looking it up. I think the Kentucky state record, which was in Cave Run, 54 inches long.
They're big fish.
They're big.
Yep, they have big ones down there. Trophy-sized fish. Some of those fisheries, a lot of reservoirs, a lot of river systems, like Tennessee, for instance, river systems, and Cisco, I mean, very oily fish. You look at some of our biggest musky waters up here, talking Tulabee, whitefish, that's what makes these huge muskies. Well, down there, they have a lot of different fish in the rivers, but they also, some of them are eating trout. There's not a more oily fish. Think about when you're cooking a trout, you know, like it makes huge muskies.
Yeah. So I was hoping you might piggyback. Have you fished?
I have a friend that moved down to Nashville and he fishes them down in Tennessee quite often. I went down there to fish stripers with him one time.
Okay.
So you can do a muskie striper trip down there in Nashville. Not only that, when you're done fishing, you can go out and see the scene down in Nashville. Like this wasn't on my list of things to do, but it's actually a really cool thing. And it's a very inexpensive flight down there. There are guides down in Tennessee that you can hire to go do this on the river, but you can drive down. It's not an unrealistic drive to get to Nashville. There's certain times of the year when we went down, I'm trying to get back down to fish with him again soon. But there's fishing to be had all year long. There's generations, they call it, on these river systems down there. And it affects the flow of the water. when there's certain flows, fishing can be just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I try to remember when I striper fished with him, we had insane rains. And I want to say it was, I think it was late winter, early spring. So I guess, yeah, maybe this could be like a spring break getaway kind of thing too. I highly recommend it. It's, you know, it's not far away. Yeah. It's not going to be sitting on, you know, long walks on a sandy beach, but it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. And so I will say I do, this isn't just a bucket list thing that I'm sharing. So my experience fishing kind of outside what we know of as musky fishing season where we are, which is going to be like summer, fall, and early winter, is actually in Illinois. So I lived in Illinois for 5 years, and that's actually when I started musky fishing. Of course, Illinois gets cold, gets winter, lakes get locked up, but they don't have seasons down there. So as soon as ice out happens, their musky lakes are open. And one of my kind of special lakes, it's actually the lake that I caught my very first musky ever on, and it's the lake that I caught my first kayak muskie on as well. So two separate occasions. I hope I'm not blowing it up too much, but it's Spring Lake in Peoria-ish. It's like 30 minutes outside Illinois. And it's a super shallow lake. It's actually fed by a river. And I think the deepest point's like 10 feet, but most of the lake is like 3 or 4, maybe 5 feet deep. And it's just stacked with smaller to medium-sized muskies. And you can't fish it by probably, I mean, depending on the year, by like May or for sure June, it's just choked out by.
So this is the time, early.
Yeah.
Early spring.
Yeah. So when I lived there and then when I moved up back up here, I was like constantly texting people in Illinois like, hey, do you think ice is out? Is ice out yet? And basically
how much
as
ice
soon
did
as it was.
There?
Depends, but you know, you can ice fish there. Yeah. So several inches. But yeah, that lake has been, it's been fun. And it's like, it's shallow. You're there in the spring. I'm always using jerk baits. I think both muskies. Well, no, the first one I caught on a chatter bait, but spinner baits. There's a lot of like down trees and logs and docks and things like that. So it's very easy to fish, even if you don't have, you know, any kind of technology with you. And it's just stacked with muskies. And there's not much around. It's pretty much in the middle of like cornfields. There are houses on the lake on one side. But it's a nice little secret find. So
Brandon, Peoria, Illinois, put it on your list.
I know. Who'd have thought?
Who'd
have
thunked it?
I know.
Peoria, Illinois. Yeah. All right. Okay. Putting that on my list.
But definitely late March, early April. Don't drive down there unless you're sure the ice is out, but good muskies.
You told me to do two. You're lucky
I did
more than two here. Okay.
I've only got one more main one after this. But isn't it, I keep remembering places when we're chatting.
I know.
There's so many places to go.
Yeah. So this I didn't even think about, but I would have to double check. I think the hunting season for Idaho also lasts into February. Don't quote me on it. Check the regulations. But I went out there, and this is not something I was thinking of, but now that we're like something else that's really cool, you can quail hunt and chukar hunt out there, which is what I did. But we also, the Snake River Canyon and the Snake River, there's also Hell's Canyon. And those are two iconic places to do that upland bird hunting up in the mountains, which is like, I do a lot of upland bird hunting, but we also went sturgeon fishing. And it's not like the sturgeon we have here, lake sturgeon. Uh-huh. There's a white sturgeon out there. They grow massive.
Yeah.
And so you have the opportunity if you go to a place like that, you could go out to Hell's Canyon and do that just as its own trip. And I know a lot of people that have done it, but
did you do the whole, like, get in the water with them?
No, because it was pretty cold. Okay. It was, you know, it was January-ish. And I held the fish in the water. But, I mean, there's something about holding, you know, battling a fish of that caliber. And I didn't catch a monster. It was, like, an 8-footer. Mm-hmm. And then right after.
Yeah, super small.
That would be small for out there,
that's
though.
That's crazy.
I know. The guy's like, all right, let's get him back out there. So then he cast his line back out. And a guy caught a 9-footer right after that. And we had one other one prior to that that was a little one, a little Joey. We call them the little tiny ones. But
7.5. No big deal.
It was actually like when you'd catch in Minnesota.
Okay.
It was just almost,
yeah.
But there's something about that river, that canyon. It's so stunning out there. So you're driving these boats and these massive boulders are on the side, and it's just like, holy cow. Mm-hmm. It's way different than anything we have around here. I mean, if you can get out onto rivers out in Western America, I mean, it is just like, you don't forget those kind of views. Yeah. It's so cool. That wasn't on my list here, but mm-hmm. I feel like it deserves to be on the list because of just like the true like hunting and fishing adventure that can be had out there. And, yeah. And like we talked about sitting on the beach and laugh about it, but that's what I think a lot of people do. Mm-hmm. For one day, they might say, all right, we're going to go out on a charter boat for a day, and then it's back to sightseeing with the family and kids and stuff. But if you really want an adventure, something like a Hell's Canyon trip mm-hmm. in Idaho, I think if I were to say in the lower 48, Idaho is probably the most underrated and most beautiful state that I've ever been to. So there you go.
While you're talking, it's just reminding me of a place that wasn't on my list, but steelhead fishing in Washington.
Ooh.
So
yeah, I went
once, and it was March a few years ago. And I actually, we had a tough day fishing wise. And I'll say it was still one of the coolest experiences of my life. I think I was in Seattle for work actually. This is probably 5-6 years ago, and stayed an extra day and rented a car, took a ferry, drove out, you know, probably 5 a.m. in the dark. I was alone and met a guide. I think we were either in Olympia National Forest or I drove through it. But just incredible country. Like I'll always remember this drive alone, just out there, and having like, there was a full moon over, you know, white capped mountains behind me, and in front of me, the sun rising over, you know, these tall pine trees. And I was just like, this is cool. And then once you're on the water, you know, on the streams, and there was a ton of rain the week before, so the water was pretty muddy and moving pretty fast, but that was fly fishing. And it was just such a fun experience. And especially, that's one of the things, like you need to go with a guide, especially if you're, you know, don't have somebody that's going to take you out. But I learned so much, and just getting to see the, you know, scenery, and had a couple of shots at fish, but not
I had
much.
A friend who did that recently. He drove from Minnesota out there. Mm-hmm. He just did his own research and made it happen. He had like it was his spring break getaway, and he did it solo.
It's awesome.
Yeah, totally. You know, I was just thinking about this, like we've been really blessed to experience so many things. Like we start like, oh, that reminds me of this.
Yeah.
Like if we both actually stop for a minute, like God has blessed us immensely to be able to experience some of these places. I don't want it to sound like, oh, I did this or that. Like I'm just thinking about all these amazing things, you know, mm-hmm. and like how cool it would be to share that with other people, which mm-hmm. is why I think these are all sincere places that I would recommend to try. And
I
to
had
go.
That exact moment when I was actually putting some notes together for this podcast. It was like, wow, there's been some amazing experiences, and boy, I'm blessed.
Am I up then? Steelhead was less? Okay. Yeah. Let's just keep it close to home. In a couple of weeks here, maybe like a month and a half or two, mid-January, so February.
What day
I would say more like March-ish. Lake of the Woods is a fishery that has monster northern pike. And there's a window when they come up and they go into these, the bays, the shallow bays, and they prepare for the spawn. And the season lasts up there well beyond what it does here in the inland waters. And you can go up and target huge pike. Put your tip ups up. You know, you do cut bait. You can do suckers. You know, some people use the cut tulaby, frozen tulaby, things like that. You can do a little research. There are likely going to be some of the walleye guides up there that'll offer that experience, but you can also do it by yourself. It's not rocket science. It's big, massive flats out there, shallow water, and you can go up with your tip-ups, and you might catch 10 of the largest northern pike you've ever mm-hmm. seen in one day.
What's your personal record up there?
This isn't about me, Natalie.
Yeah, but I got it.
A 43-inch northern.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't catch it doing that either. I caught it fishing walleyes.
Oh, really? That's always how it happens, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And actually, that's a trip that I'm going back on here in less than a month. That's the Ballard's due north trip that we do.
Are there spots left?
I don't know. There was four spots left 2 weeks ago, and I asked after the show. I said, we just talked about the Ballard's ice fishing mm-hmm. trip that we hosted. Is there spots left? Because I told people to go check it out, and they said there were four spots left. Mm-hmm. So it's possible that there might be a spot left.
If
or
you're interested,
could be, yeah, totally do it. Again, we get on a bus here at Cabela's in Rogers, Minnesota. We drive up there. Everything is taken care of for you. You have a room. They take you out on the Bombardiers, which is a cool experience. If you have a son or daughter and you just like, just the two of you want to get away for a couple days, it's over President's Day weekend, so you have that extra day off for a lot of people. Go up there and ride in one of these machines across this massive lake. And you get out into the house, it's heated. You catch walleyes, sauger, perch. I caught a 43-inch northern monster fish. It was, it's possible, eel pout. Anyway, they bring you back in. They clean your fish. Meals are great. I obviously host it, so I feel like you have a nice host. I give away some fishing stuff. Yeah, if you enjoy beverages, Coors Light sponsors it too. So it's a great trip. A lot of repeat people, once they know that the trip is open again, they sign up right away. But I think, you know, it's possible there could still be room for a couple more.
Cool.
Yep. Head to our website, doonorthoutdoors.tv, and there's a little tab that says ice fishing trip to Ballard's, and check it out. And call and find out if there's any room.
We're hopping back on an airplane. Ooh. Flying south, and we're leaving the country for this one. I think you knew I was going to talk about this.
I'm surprised we haven't left the country yet.
Yeah. We're keeping it economical.
Well, yeah.
Right?
I feel like, yeah.
So we are going to Panama, which you knew I was going to talk about Panama, right?
Well, tell me more.
Okay. I've taken two trips to Panama, and I feel like several years ago, and I still milk them. It's like all my favorite fishing stories happened on really one of the two trips. So what my specific personal experience was kayak fishing in Panama at a place called Los Buzos Resort. It's on the Azuro Peninsula, which is the south side of Panama, so on the Pacific side, because it goes kind of more or less east-west that part, in a town, kind of a town, really tiny town called Cambutal. So what I've done is a kayak fishing trip there. And I'll say, I'm going to speak from my own experience, but there's places even in Cambutal, there's other kayak fishing outfitters really all along that coast around Panama, Costa Rica. There is so much opportunity to fish out of kayaks, you know, out of boats, you name it. So if it's something that you're interested in, know that there's a lot of options, a lot of different ways to do it. You're interested in the kayak thing, if you're bringing the family, whatever, there's opportunities. But the fishing there is pretty insane, and it's insane how many fish and what type of species that you can fish for actually very close to shore there, which is one of the main draws. So when I went out of Los Buzos, it was several years ago, flew into Panama City, which in itself, we're talking about adventure, is such a cool city to see. It's definitely a, you know, world melting pot because of the canal there. And I'd recommend if you are doing a trip like this to spend a couple days in Panama City. My first trip there, I just had a day there and I was alone, so I didn't venture out too far from my hotel, but I was able to go back the next year and see more of the city. The first time I went solo, but then I didn't know anybody, but there was a group going to Los Buzos. They have like these week-long groups, so we, on my second day there, got picked up by a bus in Panama City and, went to the resort, which was maybe 3 hours away. And I'll say by resort, don't get the wrong idea. I think it's changed a lot since I've been there. In fact, there was a couple that I got really close to there that used to kind of run operations, and then, you know, some of the guides and stuff that aren't there anymore. But so I don't know how much has changed. I think they've expanded a lot, made updates and things. But when I was there, it was pretty bare bones. So we're talking like bunk beds, you know, shared bathrooms. There's some creepy crawlies. You got to check things for, you know, scorpions. And it's don't get the wrong idea by resort. It's pretty simple, but that's what makes it, you know, more accessible to, you know, people like myself and others that, you know, you're not paying for the fanciest place and you don't need it. And again, I think that they've made some changes, but the fishing there is like nothing I've experienced before. When you're going there, the main ones that you're looking for, kind of those bucket list fish, rooster fish, Kubera snapper, there's groupers, yellowfin tuna, sailfish, marlin. I don't have a personal story about that, but I'll share one in a second. Tons of like Jack Crevalle, which people
Jackfish?
Down there.
What'd you call it?
Jack Crevalle.
Okay.
They're like a big, ugly, common, you know, saltwater fish that like most people, any like saltwater angler would be like, oh, they're kind of They're kind of like how some people might feel about a smaller northern pike around here.
Hammer handle.
Yeah.
Snot
but
rocket.
But they, again, saltwater fish. They're so much fun. You catch a bunch of them. There's mahi-mahi, Sierra mackerel, tons of snappers. So my favorite experience in fishing ever happened here, and this was with a rooster fish. Now, if you're not familiar with the rooster fish, they're just cool looking. They're kind of, depending on the size, they're kind of like a black and white stripe situation, a little green. They get, as many fish, you know, once they get bigger, their coloring is less distinct. But what they're really known for is this crazy mohawk crown. Mm-hmm. So they've got this thing coming out of their head that looks kind of like a crown or a mohawk.
Mohawk, by the way, a mohawk is a good way to describe it. I pulled it up so Brandon can see. You've seen
these
before.
Little ones are the cutest fish in the world.
Yeah.
But they are not only just incredibly beautiful, but they are so powerful. And there weren't many caught. When I went, it was in January. But really, the fishing kind of heats up throughout this time of year. A lot of people would recommend actually going more in the late spring, early summer. But I was there during dry season, so meant it was warm and sunny, but it was very, very windy. So it made the fishing hard. There was only a couple rooster fish caught when I was there. It was like an unusually slow week, but I was lucky enough to hook up to a huge one, trophy size.
And you're in a kayak.
In a kayak.
How much? Yeah. How far does it pull you?
It was the most epic fight, of course, I've ever experienced. Yeah. And I'll say some of the people there were saying that it was one of the most memorable fish catches that they've seen. So this fish, there's a video about it.
Kind of dramatic, so I could see that.
Honestly, there's a video about it on my YouTube channel that I think it's like my pride and joy. But here, mostly we're fishing with artificial lures like jigs and stuff. But with rooster fish, it's pretty much all going to be live bait. So I had a moonfish on and, starts tick, 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 tick. And I'm like, oh, I think I might have some kind of fish. We'll see. And so
I think I have a nibble.
A little nibble. Yeah. Set the lever. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm kind of starting to move. I think I might be onto something. And within, I'd have to go back and like look at the footage, but within, 15, 20 seconds, the fish realized it was hooked. And I went on an absolute sleigh ride, like cruising. The guys, watching from afar were joking I could have pulled a water skier. And there was, of course, waves breaking on these rocks right in front of me.
Brandon, see how dramatic she is. She titles the video, "The Fish That Nearly Killed Me."
That's YouTube.
I'm looking at it right now.
It actually did. So the guys had
-- epic.
Epic.
Ocean kayak fishing.
I'll
great
scare
title.
You the entire story, but the guys actually in the kind of the help boat, the Panga, they had to drive between me and the rocks to scare the fish away, because it almost dragged me into these rocks that would have, destroyed my kayak and probably myself. So crazy fight, beautiful fish, most memorable experience of my life. But there's, we had opportunities to go out after sailfish. We didn't catch any in our trip, but this guy, Adam Fisk, if you look him up on social media, he's one of the guides down there. He's caught multiple marlin now out of his kayak. And they'll drag, I think, we're talking like.
I'm playing the video. Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I got to go back and watch that.
That's drama for you. Yeah.
Holy cow.
So.
I'm hooked.
But this Adam Fisk guy is unbelievable. You'll see. I mean, he's gotten dragged. Again, don't quote me, but I want to say like 20 plus miles out into the ocean.
That's
and landed sailfish. So it's a crazy experience. And it's one of those places too. It's like every single day you're wiped out. It's so, so, so much physical work. But you get in, you pull up onto the beach. They've got some light Panamanian beers that are going to be, handy for you. And, fresh fish every single day. Lots of sashimi. Beautiful. You're really in paradise. So if you can plan ahead, do a trip like that, again, Panama, Costa Rica on the Pacific side, the amount of fish and how close they are to shore is pretty incredible.
I like that kind of a fishing trip in one of those destinations, because a lot of times you get these charter boats and they go out 7 days a week and they're so used to getting, a family or a group of four, and they just want to go out and they drag a lure behind the boat and you reel them in on this basically a pool cue rod, and it's like you press a button and it reels it in for you while the boat is driving. Like, see what you did there? That's a real, like, holy cow.
It was unbelievable.
I mean, that fish almost killed her, Brandon.
Almost killed me.
Nearly killed.
Epic.
Yes, epic.
But seriously, and that, like, I didn't exaggerate it. And that's the type of thing that it's like you can, it's, if I would have showed up in Panama myself, which then I did the next year with a friend, but I wouldn't have known how to, you know, target any of those fish, but they give you enough, you know, of the right lure. They put you in the right spot.
That's what I want to do. I like those kind of trips. If there's a guide involved, I still want to do it. Yeah. Like, yeah, you can get me there. Tell me some information, but like, I want to be the one to react. I don't want you to set the hook for me. I don't want you to reel it in for me. I don't want you to do any of it, really. That's part of the thrill of a hunt or a catch is what it takes to get there.
Yeah.
That's why I like those kind of trips.
I remember the first time I caught, I think it was, we were actually fishing for bait and I caught a bonito.
Yeah.
And it's like, it looks like a tuna.
Bonito,
like,
would be a boy. Bonita would be
Bonita,
a girl.
Yes. Yeah. Not Bonita. I remember, like, got to the side of my kayak and I had this moment of like, uh-oh. Like, what do I do now? I'm like, are there sharks around? Am I just reaching and grab this? And they're like, yeah, just grab it and, you know, hook it up, like rig it up and throw it back out there as bait. I'm talking like an 18-inch powerful fish. I'm like, this is my bait? Like, I want to, do I need to sign a waiver here? But cool trip. So one to plan for.
Sounds like one that's going to go pretty high on Brandon's list. Should we end it with that? That's a pretty good one.
I think we're about at an hour.
Yeah.
We are just...
Any quick honorable mentions? Anyone want to rifle off there that people look into?
I mean, an airboat alligator sightseeing. Like, I filmed this alligator hunt one time down in Florida, and that in itself is like a whole different podcast. Mm-hmm. But just to be there in that place, like, it's wild in certain parts of Florida. Mm-hmm. They call it their wilderness, and you're like, holy cow, there's not a house for, like, 20 miles where we ended up. But we were way back. You could see how people can disappear in this world be found when you go back into some of those places. So,
yeah,
being on an airboat and driving through those parts, whether you're hunting, fishing, or not, just the experience. Pretty cool.
All right. Moment of truth.
I'll be honest with you. A bunch of them sound like a lot of fun to me. I'm partial to Washington. I think it's one of the most beautiful areas to go. But,
victory.
But Travis, before you get completely upset, well, actually, I went with Panama. So you still lost. You still lost.
1-2 punch.
Yeah, like it's number 1, 2, 3, 4, 4.1, 4.2, 4.3, like your four-parter, whatever.
No, Nevada actually sounded really appealing to me, too. That part of Nevada is also very gorgeous. It's a cool part of the country. You don't actually see that much. Most people just drive south of that area or just drive completely through it. So that's another really cool spot as well. So a great list by both.
Thank you. Well, we certainly hope that those listening at home found something that might be enticing, inspirational. It's time left to plan something this year. Plan ahead for future years. There's a lot of adventure to be had.
Yeah, and if you're stuck here at home like I am, I'm not even going to say stuck. If you're here, get outside.
Yeah.
Get that vitamin D.
Yes, love it. Mm-hmm. That's it for now.
Yep, we'll be back next week with another episode of the Due North Outdoors Podcast.